You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to another episode of the Out of Sight podcast on the Liberty Ballers Network. Chill ride, chill vibe. Today's Monday, and we're recording. A little dreary out. Makes perfect sense that I'm going to invite this person on because I am going to have to go across the pond for this one. All the way from England, United Kingdom, Associate Editor of Liberty Ballers, Mr. Tom West is on the pod today talking about Doc Rivers, Blake Griffin, and Ben Simmons and all the fine connections to be made with those three with the piece that he wrote last week entitled How Doc Rivers Can Use His Blake Griffin Tactics with Ben Simmons and the Sixers. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
So, like I said, this is the first time I've had to go across the pond for a podcast. And I'm actually really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to come on. Yeah, I guess I'm the first British guest. So, yeah, I'll do my best.
First British guest on the podcast. So, yeah, you have supplanted yourself. Like, you're famous.
I'm happy to.
So let's dive right in, and I'll just start with this. So Doc Rivers, in his introductory press conference, and you pointed this out in your column, he said that he's not overly concerned with Simmons' shooting or what position he's labeled as, which is something that gets dissected and talked about every second of every day, pretty much with Ben Simmons. So when you heard that and the comments following that, what was your initial thought that went through your head?
I mean, I think the initial thought was just he's clearly very excited to coach Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And he kept mentioning that they've won 65% of their games when they've played together. And he mentioned that he must have said that about five times through the press conference. So his emphasis is clearly that the Sixers work well when they're both on the floor together and he'll make it work. And he's looking forward to, you know, giving it a shot. It's interesting with him sort of dodging the question of, you know, Ben Simmons' position. You know, I think the sort of question was getting at, you know, is he going to play like a power forward like he did in the bubble, or is he going to be, you know, more of the sort of prototypical point guard role he was playing, you know, beforehand? I think, you know, we can't know too much what he's going to do yet. He didn't want to, you know, obviously give too much away about his thoughts. You know, he didn't mention his starting lineup or anything like that. So it's kind of unclear, but I think he's basically looking forward to experimenting, and he's not trying to peg Simmons as one thing specifically. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. But yeah, there's not too much to gauge from what he said so far.
And he also said, quote, we just have to figure out how to make it work the best. And you pointed out the Sixers won 62% of their games with both Simmons and Embiid on the floor together. So I'm going to reiterate something I said on the podcast last week. Stop trying to break up our duo. Just stop it. It works. Leave them alone. When you dissect the roster a little bit more, there's another familiar piece here. Like Tobias Harris had some of his better years as a Clipper.
Yeah, he was at his best when he was with the Clippers and under Doc Rivers. And I think, you know, maybe there's some outlier shooting in that. Maybe, you know, maybe he was particularly hot from three, but there were definitely some factors that played into that. Obviously, he got more touches. That's one thing. But, you know, Doc, you know, put him in more pick and rolls. He gave him more high screens to work with, you know, a fair chunk more than he's had with the Sixers so far. And that does play to Harris' strengths. Obviously, you know, he's not a particularly good passer, he's not a great ball handler, but he can work well in those sort of high pick and roll settings when he, you know, can make simple passing reads or he can pull up off the dribble from three. That's something that he needs to do more of. Maybe Doc, you know, putting him in more of those actions when he joins the Sixers can help Harris look a little more like his Clipper self, maybe be a little bit more prolific from three. I think that would definitely be the aim. And, you know, during his press conference, Doc did say You know, he had a lot of good stuff to say about Harris, and he did specifically mention, you know, how well he can work with pick and rolls and high screens. So I think maybe seeing a bit more of that is something we can probably expect.
When Doc had Blake Griffin, and you pointed this out, Griffin was one of the most explosive finishers in the NBA and probably one of the best that I've ever seen. The term being Mozgov is because of Blake Griffin. So, yes, Simmons may not be as explosive as Blake Griffin, but he's still a decent enough finisher to where Doc can kind of do similar things with Simmons slashing and cutting, doing those kinds of things.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, he's still really athletic. I mean, Griffin's on another level, isn't he? Like Mozgov dunks, Kendrick Perkins, Pau Gasol. Like, there's so many crazy plays. But yeah, Simmons is still really athletic, and he was leaning into that a bit more, I think, this season, wasn't he? Like, he was more aggressive. He was a bit more physical, embracing contact, which is something he's always had an issue with. And it's still something he can keep working on, but he did get more aggressive. He had a couple of poster dunks, which is something like, it's quite rare for him. You wouldn't think it would be, but he did have a few of those this season, and he was better, you know, going through contact and getting to the rim. So I definitely think he can be used as that kind of pick and roll scorer. You know, maybe not, obviously not quite as well as Griffin, but he can still be used there. And then obviously the short roll passing, I think, is what's really interesting.
One of my favorite poster dunks. I don't think it happened this past season. Might have been last season, but it was the Milwaukee game after Giannis called him an effing baby, and then he just came back and just thunder dunked him on the other end. That's probably one of my favorites. And I just want Ben to embrace that that emoji that he uses so often. Like, dude, get angry yeah, when you go to the rim. Jesus. With the difference between Blake and Ben Simmons, it's always going to be about the shooting, like every single time. Like, any time that kind of parallel gets brought up with Doc Rivers as the head coach. And I wanted to bring this up. When Blake was kind of in his prime, as far as like his time with the Clippers goes, so this is 2013-17. So in these four seasons, let me phrase this the right way, from 16 feet to the three-point line, not three-point shooting, this is the mid-range. So from 2013-2017, 27% of his shots came from that distance, followed by 38, followed by 46, and then rounded out about 28. But then the percentages weren't that – they weren't great, but, I mean, you're shooting from that distance anyway, so you're looking at 37, 40, 38, and 44. Are we expecting Doc Rivers to do anything like that anytime soon? I would assume no, right?
Yeah, I think I mean, obviously everyone wants to see Simmons shoot more, but I think, yeah, we've really got to see it to believe it. I'm not going to expect anything until we see a bunch of games where he's actually taken those shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just, you know, thought about it again when going back through the film. Like, I mean, Blake Griffin's development is really one of the more impressive development arcs, I think, in recent history. Like,
it definitely is. Him and Kawhi Leonard, I would say.
Yeah, Kawhi's another good one. Like, the amount of skill that Blake's added, like, he's gone from being a non-shooter and a bad free throw shooter to being like a capable pull-up three-point shooter on like fairly high volume at this point in his career is insane. And obviously with the passing as well, he's grown so much. Obviously it would be good if Simmons could add that range. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. But I think a lot of the pick and roll play that, you know, Doc used with Griffin was before he was really a threat. And, you know, you mentioned the shooting numbers. He wasn't overly efficient, even though he was happy shooting from mid-range, you know, as his career went on. But he wasn't taking any threes really until sort of later on with the Clippers. I think he only took more than one per game in his last full season with the Clippers. So it's not like he was, you know, really stretching the floor. So Doc can still use a lot of his Blake plays with Simmons. Obviously, he can get a bit more creative if Simmons will actually shoot, but we'll see what happens. I know everyone's hanging on for that, but yeah, we'll wait and see.
And we always talk about the shooting and then ignore the simple fact that Simmons is an elite passer. And I think that's where we're going to start with the real with the real meat and potatoes here. Like, you talk about the short roll passing. Simmons is one of a handful of guys that make passes where you're just thinking to yourself, how the heck did he even see that guy over there, or who even attempts to make that pass? So something like that is an element that Doc didn't have with Blake Griffin, because as good as Blake Griffin is as kind of like a passer, Simmons is just, he's just on a whole nother level. Specifically with the short roll passing, how do you see something like that working out with Simmons and Doc Rivers as this gets underway next season?
I mean, I think it can work well, but I think, and I mentioned this in the piece, it all comes down to who the Sixers can add in the offseason, because their lack of pick and roll ball handling is a big problem. Obviously, Shake came along really well in that role. And like I said, you know, Tobias Harris can handle a bit more, but they still need perimeter creators so badly. Like we saw it in the playoffs when Simmons was out, that like the lack of help around Embiid was like ugly to watch.
It's funny. Who knew that you actually need ball handlers and pick and roll perimeter people to actually make professional basketball work?
It actually helps if you can dribble. Like, it's mad.
It helps if you can dribble.
But I think it can work well, you know, with Simmons' short roll passing. Like, Blake was often used to just set up weak side shooters, and he did it well. And like you said, Simmons is a better passer, and he can do that. It's just how much the Sixers can maximize things. Like, can they add another reliable pick and roll ball handler? You know, because they need pull up threats to really, you know, bring the extra defender outside, you know, when Simmons screens, to give him more space to roll inside and then pick apart the defense on like a three and on a sort of advantageous situation. And they need the good shooters to be a threat, because otherwise, you know, he's just going to be driving into a cramped lane.
It would be nice to have more shooters than just Furkan Korkmaz. That would be nice.
Yeah. Furkan and Shake,
and that's about it. Like, you're not gonna do much in this league if you only have two proven-ish shooters.
Yeah, it's just, oh yeah. It's there's nothing left to say at this point. We've been talking about how bad it's been all season, but yeah.
I mean, listen, we all have to work through this together, and you know what? Talking about it kind of cures the depression and seeing where things can go from here. So talk about shooters, and I have to bring this up with you. Doc has Tobias here, and there's been nothing but Chris Paul rumors pretty much ever since the season ended. Is that something that you personally would entertain, or are you just trying to roll as is? Because I don't know if you can get Chris Paul without giving up one, or you have to give up Horford or Tobias. Hopefully Horford. But then you have to give up all the other young pieces and draft picks to get the rest of it done. With Doc as the head coach, does he need maybe somebody like a Chris Paul, or can he like do similar things with Shake Milton and kind of create what Chris Paul did in Los Angeles?
I mean, I think someone like Chris Paul is pretty ideal for the Sixers. I mean, just from a skill set standpoint, obviously the age and the contract and the injury, you know, potential injury concerns are, you know, the sort of question marks. But I think that's someone, you know, regardless of who they hired, I think who was always going to be a good target for them, just because, I mean, the offense would be on another level with him. Like, he was so great in the clutch this year. He can create a bit off the dribble. You know, he's a good shooter. He's obviously an amazing passer. And I think he'd be, you know, perfect in that role working with Simmons and, you know, even Embiid in a, you know, sort of more pick and roll settings, because Doc has always used a lot of pick and roll in his offense, and that's going to be a big shift from Brett Brown. I think even without adding anyone, you know, the Sixers are going to be running more pick and roll, I'm sure, and Shake can do that fairly well. So I think they can still replicate some of the short roll stuff that, you know, Doc used with Griffin with Simmons and Shake, and it can work well. But I definitely would, you know, look at getting Chris Paul if I'm the Sixers. Like, I do think that's someone who should be high up their list, just because his offensive skill set suits so perfectly what they need. But yeah, like you said, it's how much it takes to get him, because Al Horford and Tobias Harris are both massive negatives with their contracts. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think Horford's easier to move, just because he is making less money and he's got the one less year on his deal, which makes a big difference. Because Tobias in his final year is still over $40 million, which is just so tough to swallow.
Oh, that's going to be a hard pill in a couple of years.
Yeah, so it just depends what you have to attach. You know, is it Matisse Thybulle? the OKC pick this year, another future first or two, like, it's going to add up because it's going to be hard to shift. But I definitely think Chris Paul's worth looking at. I'm just not sure how likely it is.
Another thing that Doc said in his first press conference, which kind of got me excited, if you're not a great shooting team, create more movement. Yes. Yes. Yes, Doc. Talk to the people. And it fits with the pick and rolls. And now we're talking about 4 or 5 pick and rolls. And that's where I just start salivating. Because, listen, you're going to put Simmons in a role with Joel Embiid and turn it into Lob City East. Okay, that sounds like fun.
Those are the plays, I think, that, yeah, it's a fun little wrinkle in the offense. Like, Simmons and Embiid already do their snug pick and rolls pretty well. Just, like, so, it's so near the basket that it's so hard to stop Simmons if he gets a good screen. And you can't go under because he's only a few steps away from the rim at that point.
Right.
And obviously, you know, DeAndre Jordan was an amazing lob threat back in his heyday. Like, he was the best role man in the league for a while. And obviously, that's somewhere Embiid needs to grow. He's, you know, doesn't always roll hard to the rim. And he's obviously not as explosive, you know, vertically as DJ was, like no one was at that time. But it's still something that Simmons and Embiid can do. And, you know, Doc used it with Blake and DJ. And I think he'll probably look to do it again. I'm sure he will. And if you have more shooters around that, it makes everything so much easier.
And then this is another wrinkle, because DeAndre Jordan is not the shooter that Joel Embiid is. So that's even more wrinkles to throw in. Like, here, Doc, here's DeAndre Jordan, but with a jump shot. Have fun. Have fun. Go at it. Go ahead. Create some stuff.
Yeah, he can do so much more with Embiid. I mean, yeah, the offensive skill difference is, like, it's just another planet, isn't it? So there's no comparison, really. But I'm looking forward to seeing what Doc does with Embiid, just, you know, how much more he uses him in pick and rolls and that kind of thing. How he uses him with Simmons, you know, whether he looks to stagger more or, you know, he really leans in on them together, because that clearly seems to be what he's most excited about. And I think if you can just add that extra perimeter creator next to them, that would make the big difference. So who they can add in, you know, trade or the draft, I think, you know, can hopefully help and make the Sixers offense a little more bearable to watch next year.
Memo to the Sixers: do all your research for second round picks. Don't just sell away second round picks. We will fight you if you do that. Just telling you now, I will be the first one down there in Camden, just ready to go.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a 2-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, "Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back." If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, "Everything okay in there?" "Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog."
Wanted to get into the section about attacking from the elbows, which is almost my, I wanted the Sixers to do this so much. Griffin ranked top 5 in the NBA in elbow touches per game every season from 2013, the whole time with the Clippers. And it just made perfect sense for me for the Sixers to run horn set, which is Simmons at the top of the key and then Embiid and Horford or Embiid and Harris at the elbows, and then just run pick and roll, pick and pop, like all day off of that.
Yeah, I think that's something they can use more. I just think it's going to take someone with a more pick and roll sort of favorable approach like Doc to maybe use that a little bit more. And like, you know, we said, Simmons is a better passer than Blake, and Doc still had so much success with Blake, you know, at the elbows as a passer. And he still wasn't a big threat as a jump shooter then.
Not in the beginning, no.
Yeah, not especially, you know, especially not in the earlier years. So it's not like, you know, his defender had to pressure him super close. And like, Doc still used some pretty good movement off the ball for his shooters. Obviously, like, JJ Redick is the standout. You know, some of that is him just, you know, impromptu running around the floor, but there's a lot, you know, good sort of off-ball screening and movement that Doc used to get his guys open. And that was often running around Griffin at the elbow. And, you know, he used tons of dribble handoffs as well. I reckon we could see more of that with Simmons at the elbow and Shake, you know, and Harris potentially, although he's not been too good at handoffs before, but Korkmaz and Shake, I think, could use, you know, quite a lot of handoffs with Simmons. So there's a lot of options there.
Shake, just get on the treadmill, my man. I want you running cardio for the entire off season. Cause just, I just want you doing a whole lot of running. Just run to the open spaces.
Yeah. And they started doing that more in the bubble. It's, you know, it sucks that Simmons got hurt when he did. Cause it was coming along quite well. And, you know, he was attacking a lot more of the elbows. He sounded like he was enjoying it. Obviously it was a pretty big role change for him, but you know, we started to see it come along quite well, and he was, you know, working with Shake well, with, you know, him moving into the starting lineup. So maybe, you know, Doc can pick up from there. And I think he's, you know, looking at his time with the Clippers and Blake, I think there's a lot of sort of stylistic approaches that could translate to how he uses Simmons.
Now, we all have our opinions on why the offense looked so stagnant last year. And I kind of want to pick your brain about it. Like, do you think it was more the personnel or the coaching or just a high combination of both?
I mean, I'm not the world. I think Brett was a good coach. I'm not like his biggest fan. I think it was time to move on and, you know, find a new approach, find a new voice. But I do think it was more personnel based. I just don't think anyone could have realistically made that team work. I mean, there's just too many flaws. I think, you know, at the time last season, like, I'm not going to act like I didn't think there were any positives to the moves they made. A lot of people, you know, thought there were some strengths to it. I thought, you know, with Horford, you know, it made sense from a few angles in terms of, you know, Embiid not having a good backup was a big issue. You know, Horford could shoot a little bit more. He's a good passer. And then, you know, obviously trying to jam him into the starting lineup just didn't work. The offense was horrible with Simmons and Embiid. He wasn't used much as a role man or a short role passer, which is one of his sort of best strengths. He never really got to do much of that. And it just worked horribly. And there's just not enough ball handling and perimeter creation. They didn't have anyone they could dump the ball to really to create an easy basket from the perimeter. And that's, you know, what they needed so badly before. That's what they needed Jimmy Butler for. And then they didn't keep him. And and then they, you know, they paid the price for it. They just didn't have anyone who could create like that. You know, Shake obviously broke out as the season went on, but there's only so much he can do. He's not super explosive with the ball. He's not an amazing ball handler. The Sixers don't have anyone on the roster except for Embiid, who's great at getting to the line. That's a big issue. They just needed someone like that, you know, like Jimmy Butler, who just had a historic bunch of finals performances. They just need someone with that skill set.
Thanks, Jimmy, for twisting that knife. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Listen, I'm not sour about it much, but I mean, listen, if the Miami Heat wanted, you can cruise to the NBA Finals running all the cowardly zone that you want. I mean, it worked, so it's fine. And just getting back to your point about like personnel, I thought it was a half decent idea. If, like, to close out games, you have Embiid, Simmons, Horford, Tobias Harris, and Thibault, and just play, you know, Grindhouse East, right? But even the Memphis Grizzlies had Mike Conley, somebody that could do something on the perimeter, both shooting and passing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the other thing. Like, everyone thought the Sixers were going to be a dominant defense, and, you know, they should have been able to lead the league defensively, and they were good, they were still really good, but they weren't dominant, and the effort just went too much. Like, the difference on the road was ridiculous. And if they didn't have that on their side, which was kind of like the given, even if you thought the offense was going to be a disaster, which would be fair enough, they at least had, you know, an elite defense to anchor them, and that wasn't the case. And without that, without any perimeter creation to fall back on, except for, you know, Ben Simmons and Shake Milton coming along. Like, there was just nothing. There was just wasn't enough.
All the positives about Doc Rivers, and you did kind of touch on some of his flaws. One kind of hit me right in the face. Leaned too heavily on his favorite veterans. That I thought was kind of interesting, because I kind of, if I remember the Clippers and going back, yeah, he leaned on Chris Paul a heck of a lot. He leaned on Blake Griffin a heck of a lot, which is fine, was no problem. But if they aren't particularly on that night, like, that, you got to shift, Doc. Like, you had, like, are you worried about his in-game adjustments, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest concern. And I think if you're wanting him to be a great playoff adjustment X's and O's guy who can just make quick changes on the fly, I think that's where he's probably going to disappoint. It was often, I mean, Jamal Crawford back in the day, and even Paul Pierce, you know, for less of the time, those were the sort of two of the main guys that he would always play heavily, and it often hurt the team. And he didn't always, you know, have tons of options. Obviously, Crawford had some Sixth Man of the Year wins with Doc, but he did lean on him a lot. And then obviously this year, you know, playing Montrezl Harrell over Zubats.
Oh my God.
Was so costly, and all the evidence pointed to playing Zubats instead, and he stuck with Harrell. And that was a big reason why they ended up losing. Like, the team was just so much worse with Harrell, you know, at both ends of the floor in that series. And he sort of stuck to his guns and stuck with the guy who he said was the better player. And that's just not, it just wasn't working. And I think a lack of sort of adaptability and sort of just leeway and making more adjustments and being a bit more flexible is one of his issues. And I think that's probably why some Clipper fans who were pleased to see him go were pleased he left. So I think that's probably the concern when you're looking at him with the Sixers. But I'm not sure who maybe he would favour that he shouldn't, you know. Maybe we'll see him play Horford a bit too much, or, you know, try and stick him with the starting lineup and, you know, make the best of what they have and, you know, ride with that a bit too much. I don't know yet, but I think lack of adjustments is the concern.
If I had to guess, my money would be on Harris because of past history.
Yeah, that could be one. I mean, obviously, the difference is, like, Harris is, I mean, I think most situations Harris is going to be, you know, a safe player. Like, he's not a big enough defensive liability to where I think he'd be consistently getting you burned throughout a whole playoff series. And offensively, even though, you know, we all know about his issues as a creator and how, you know, limited he is in that sense, he can at least shoot, and he's not like some 38-year-old, like,
yeah,
an old Jamal Crawford whose Doc's just going to trot out and he can't handle 35 minutes or something a game. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see sort of what tendencies he has and what he sticks to as the season goes on. And obviously, depending on what changes they make, you know, in the off season, that might influence, you know, who Doc sort of starts favouring and that. But yeah, we'll have to see how that all plays out. There'll be a lot to think about when projecting, you know, how he wants to manage his rotation and what he might do in the playoffs.
There's a small sliver of a concentric circle that includes Sixers fans and Jamal Crawford fans. After this podcast, they're all coming for you, Tom. I'm just telling you that now. I'm just warning you now. Oh my goodness. I do like Doc for his creative mind, especially in the pick and roll. Is he enough? Do you think the Sixers should hire one or more offensive minds? Like, Alvin Gentry's name was being floated around, but is that something that you could see happening even still, even if it's not Alvin Gentry? Somebody that thinks, you know, it's 2020, we should incorporate maybe some more jump shooting if we have the perimeter shooting, like, not be so pick and roll heavy intensive, Doc.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that would make the Doc hire better. I think just a bit of extra sort of offensive creativity, you know, maybe another mind who's, you know, can embrace some different styles and some different stuff, is definitely worth it. I think Alvin Gentry, like you mentioned, would be a really good hire. Apparently that was a serious possibility, was reported, but I don't know how that's developing or if that's still likely, but I definitely think someone like that would be good, just to have, yeah, just something a little more alongside Doc. Like, I think he's a good coach, but he's not like an X's and O genius. So I think if you have someone to add on, you know, some stuff to the offense, help with their movement and just, you know, provide some extra experimentation, I think that's definitely something they should look to do. But yeah, we'll see who they can find.
I think that's why I was higher on D'Antoni than I was on Doc Rivers, because I felt like D'Antoni was way more creative.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why I'd have had D'Antoni above Doc too. Yeah, just because you know how much offensive success he's had over the years and how he's adapted to different styles, you know, bringing in more pick and roll, cutting down, using more ISOs with Chris Paul and James Harden. Obviously, the way he's pushed pace and used three-pointers, but he's changed over the years and, you know, adapted to his styles. And we know how creative and successful he's been there, you know, obviously more so than Doc. So I think if you can add someone like Alvin Gentry to go with Doc, I think that would be really good to sort of help the hire.
See, now I'm hyped now. Now I'm excited, and it sucks because we don't know when the hell the next season's supposed to start yet.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm being completely optimistic, even being totally optimistic, I would say mid-February.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I think the last thing I'd seen from Adam Silver was that, you know, January at the earliest. And
I think January is way wishful thinking.
I'd probably lean more February as well. I mean, I don't know what to think. I mean, they want to get back in arenas, don't they, and bring fans back.
Yeah.
I can't see how likely that is in February. I don't see how that's happening. But if they don't want to do another bubble, if that was just a case to get this season finished, then I don't know how it can start as early as January.
I don't know how other cities or states, but the Pittsburgh Steelers and likely Philadelphia Eagles are going to have fans in the stands starting. That started this past weekend.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. And if it still goes well and trends upwards, I guess you could see more, because I think there was a limit of like 7,500 people or something.
Yeah.
But we'll just have to see what happens as far as like what happens after this election and the plans that are made to further tackle COVID-19. It's weird ass year. It's just been abysmal and just awful. Just I'm tired of being around the same four walls all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a weird year, and nothing will surprise me at this point with the way 2020 has gone. So
nothing at all.
Yeah.
So let me just close real quick. How are things over there across the pond as far as like coronavirus and everything else going on?
I mean, we had been getting on, you know, quite well. Things have been going better. The cases have recently started to increase quite a bit over the last month or so.
That's not good.
So we're starting to see a lot more localized, not full lockdowns, but changes in restrictions. So we've basically just brought in a new tiered system. So basically, depending on the amount of cases in given areas around the country, there are different areas based on, you know, how much stuff is open, who you're allowed to visit, how many people can get together and all that kind of thing. So obviously really hoping that those changes start bringing the cases back down again, because they've been trending up quite quick. So it's just so hard to predict how everything is going to go.
Is there a high concentration of like numbskullery? Because there are. Listen, they were having. They were. I swear to God, they were doing like COVID parties in New Jersey back in like July. I'm like, what are you people doing? You are effing it up for the rest of us, okay?
Oh man, it just gets me so angry. There's so many stupid people that just don't treat it seriously. Still,
and even just the amount of people effing New Jersey. Every time it's effing New Jersey.
Even just like, it's not even the people that are having parties or meetups that they shouldn't be. It's just like, if I go to get food shopping, the amount of people that can't put a mask on and it's just hanging off their chin, or like they don't put it over their nose.
Put an effing mask on all the way.
It's been almost the whole year. Like, how have you not got the mask on yet? It's such basic stuff, but I mean, it just makes it worse for everyone else. But
and of course, I'm heartbroken because the one time in the last, like, as long as I've been a fan, the one time Liverpool takes EPL, I can't fly over and celebrate with everybody because I don't want to get on an airplane right now.
Oh man, Jesus. That sucks. Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know who you support. So if you end up ending the Zoom call because I'm a Liverpool fan, I don't hold anything like that against you. It's fine.
Oh no, I used to be a big football fan. Less so now. I don't really watch much actually. So you watch way more than I do. But
no. It's very centered on one team though. So it's fine. Tom West, associate editor of Liberty Ballers, thank you for coming on. Looking forward to Doc and Ben and Joel and seeing what he can do with all of this. Like, this, that was a fantastic piece, and it makes me think the Sixers are going to be fun next year, whenever the season starts. But let everybody know where people can find you on, you know, social media or podcast, Liberty Ballers, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can, you know, read me, libertyballers.com, and then on Twitter, at TomWestNBA. That's where I post all my work and talk Sixers and a bit of general NBA and stuff. But yeah, I think that's it.
Appreciate you for coming on, and I know it's late over there, so get some rest and stay safe over there.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks for having me on.
Looking forward to getting you back here at the Wells Fargo Center parking lot.
I hope so. For not too long.
Yeah, we want you here at the damn championship parade, okay?
If it happens, I'll be there.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
All right.